welcome everyone to iloverealestate.tv. Today I thought we would talk about a very different kind of strategy, and this is one that some states are better at than others, and the rules and regulations change right across the country. But I thought it would be good to actually talk about some of the income strategies. I mean, in the training that I do with the I Love Real Estate community, There's lots and lots of strategies that we do. And, you know, what we get to talk about on the podcast is only just a start of some of the strategies. But I thought it'd be good to actually talk about this one here in particular, because it's a great way to turn existing properties even into something that's a little bit more income producing. And it's one of the things that when you're looking at having existing properties and, you know, you've got, you know, they're sitting there negatively geared and all of these kind of things, which all of us hate, it's a good idea to even consider this. Is it possible? Does the market demand it? You know, is it something you can handle? All sorts of things like that. So we're going to discuss that topic, and the topic is actually rooming houses and, you know, rent by the room and all of these things where you've got multiple people, multiple tenants in the one house. Now, to help me out with this, I have my absolute stars who are, they kind of specialize in this strategy. This is the one strategy that they've decided to, you know, to do quite a bit of, amongst other things, obviously. But they're here to actually have a bit of a talk as well. Now, their names are Mark and Amanda. Guys, are you there?
We're here.
Hey. Now, it's very special to have you on today because it is actually Amanda's birthday. So Amanda's actually giving up her day to, well, some of it anyway, to have a little chat to all you guys out there. So thank you, Amanda. Now, tell me, guys, you have quite a number of properties where you rent on a room-by-room basis. Now, obviously, when we talk about renting room-by-room or you can take it to rooming houses and then you take it to boarding houses, which is kind of the next stage up from that, the thing that obviously comes to mind is management. How do you find the management? Is it something that you have kind of grown into, or is it something that, you really don't find as such a hassle?
No, it is a lot of work, and I had to learn a lot very quickly about how to manage that. So it does take a lot of work, and there's a lot of property visits involved in making sure everything's running smoothly.
Now, do you think you have to be a certain type of person to be able to handle that? I mean, do you have to have tough skin or be a martial arts expert like you are?
Look, I don't think that's necessary. You need to be able to communicate effectively with people, so I suppose you do need a fairly tough skin. I mean, people will try things on like they will in any market, but dealing with a lot more people, obviously that's amplified a lot more.
And I guess because you're, these properties you actually manage yourself. Although some of the properties, you know, in this using this strategy, there are actually real estate agents who will manage properties as well, aren't there?
There are some agents. It's probably starting to become a little bit more prevalent. There's a few that will do it until they learn that they really don't know how. There's probably a couple that can do a reasonable job of it, but most of them, if they try and treat it like their normal rentals, it doesn't work like that.
And why is that, do you think?
Again, it's the volume of people. You've got a lot more to deal with when you've got more people in a closer environment.
Mm.
You do tend to get a little bit more turnover as well, so it's going to require more property visits too.
So when you're renting on a room-by-room basis, I mean, there's all different levels of this. You know, you can have those that are, you know, one step up from sleeping on the street, and then you can have those that are just, you know, temporary accommodation for, you know, out of divorce. You can have them from, just coming to town and haven't got anywhere to stay just yet. You just get people who don't want to have a whole house or the responsibility of a full lease. They just want a room. What kind of area do you specialise in? What mix do you have?
The majority of ours are unemployed or one step away from homeless. Some of that's based on where we are. I mean, we have had workers at times in certain industries. If there's work for a 6 month period in that area or something like that, sometimes you'll get people that are maybe away a lot for work, so they'll take something like that so that they're not having to maintain anything while they're away.
Yeah,
So we get a little bit of a mix, but majority of ours are unemployed.
So that's just what you've chosen to specialise in, isn't that right?
I suppose it sort of more happened that way based on where we originally started with the properties, and that was based on converting properties we originally had.
And they were lower cost properties in regional areas and things like that.
Yeah, right, yeah.
Okay, so let's just put...
Do you charge more rent for the bottom end market? As you get to the better client, you do have to drop your rent, so which makes sense because the bottom end are usually the harder to work with.
Yeah, yeah. So let's get away from that end of the market, and we'll come back and talk about that in a minute. But there's all sorts of people that, well, there's all sorts of rent by the room specialty areas, I guess is what we should call them, because you've got the student market for starters.
Yep.
Now, in the student market, obviously we've got, one of the things that comes up in the student market is that, you won't be able to rent it over Christmas. What do you think about that?
That definitely does happen, and there's a lot of cases that I've seen around where people are doing like a 10-month lease or something like that.
Mm.
My view on that is I would probably, even if I had to drop the rent a little bit, I'd probably make it a 12-month lease just to make sure that the income was coming over the whole year, just to spread it out a bit, and you've got that commitment.
Yeah.
It depends. It may work in some areas to have a 10-month lease, and you might be able to get a little bit of holiday rental in over the Christmas period, depending on where you are.
Mm. And I guess the other, another category to consider in this is the executive market, which is totally at the other end from where you guys are.
Yeah.
But in the executive market, I know I used to live in Canberra at one time, and there's a lot of that executive style requirements, Sydney, Melbourne, things like that, where, you've got people that need to be in a certain place for a small amount of time or maybe not all the week. That executive style room by room renting kind of suits them as well. Any comments on that end of the market?
It definitely does. And you'll even in that market, you'll sometimes get someone that's in an area for a 3-month period, or as you mentioned, they might be down for 4 days of the week or something like that. So there's definitely a market there. Mm. There is generally more servicing required, as in a service apartment type thing, you're probably providing a linen service and some cleaning and stuff like that as well. But they're usually happy to pay extra for that as well.
Yeah. And I guess, with that sort of market, sometimes even there's more services to add, like Foxtel, internet, those types of things as well, which I guess at your end of the market, you really don't kind of provide.
No, we don't. Sort of toying with the idea of internet in some places, but it'll be at an additional cost. So, but you're right, in the executive market, that's definitely a requirement. You wouldn't be able to do it without it.
No, definitely not. And let's just talk about, we'll keep going with where we're going there. Transient style communities is another area where, you might have fruit picking or contracts in mining and things like that, where there's a need at a certain time and then it kind of fades away. Are any of your properties in those kind of locations?
They're not specifically. We have had instances where we've had like a power company coming and doing work in an area, or a road company or something like that, and have picked up some accommodation out of that for a period of time.
Hmm.
Some of them can be quite good. We had one situation where a company was paying 6 months in advance at a time. So,
that's nice.
but that doesn't happen often. We're not really in a fruit picking area or anything. But there's certainly opportunities for that though.
Yeah, sure. Okay, now at your end of the market, I guess you've got the consistency there at your end of the market because there's a need for lower cost living right around the country. It doesn't really matter where you are. There's certainly that need for someone to stay, not under the bridge or on the street, but that lower cost living into the market. Because isn't it true that if someone is actually living on the street, they can't get the dogs? They don't have an address. Is that something I've heard? Am I right on that or not?
No, they still get their payments. The only thing they miss out on is rent assistance. So they still can get their payments, classed as homeless, essentially.
Mm-hmm. So when they, obviously take up a room in a place like that you provide and things like that, they get the rent assistance so that, apart from not being cold on the street, yeah. There wouldn't be much difference in pay anyway because of the rent assistance coming in at that lower end of the market. Am I right on that?
The rent assistance doesn't cover all of their rent. It's probably about a third of their rent is covered by the rent assistance.
Okay. So tell me what you have to provide. What do you give them?
There's minimum standards, so there's what you have to provide, which a lot of that relates to some of the things like fire safety, door locks, all that sort of stuff. So it's a lockable room. They've got their own space. There's minimum sizes on the rooms, which, again, vary state by state. We provide, basic furniture, a bed and things like that. We're not currently providing linen, but being the market that we're dealing with, they can usually get that given to them by one of the support agencies like Vinnie's or someone like that anyway. Right. So basically just basic furniture. There's kitchen, so there's all cooking facilities and all that sort of stuff. But that's about it.
Right down to the tea towels and things like that or not?
Yeah.
Okay, and thinking about turnover of that sort of thing, how often would you have to replace all that stuff?
It depends on what happens. I mean, we used to have a bit of an issue with plates and knives and forks and all that sort of stuff, so we've changed how we do that. Instead of doing that communally, we issue it per person and they're responsible for their own. Right. So that's cut down on that. But still pots and pans, how often do you reckon? You'd probably replace them probably annually in a house. Yeah, maybe some houses more often, some houses less often.
Well, let's talk about the difference on some of your houses. Let's just pick one in your own mind of a house that was, previously rented at X dollars and then you rented it by the room and what that meant. Give me some figures just to talk about.
What have we got as a good example of it? Yeah. Okay, so what was that rented for?
300.
So it was rented at around the 300 a week. It'd probably, in normal rentals, be above 300 now. It'd be mid to high threes probably now if we're renting it as a standard house. And that generally brings
How many bedrooms was that?
It was a four-bedroom house.
Four-bedroom, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
And then what do you do with that? What does it rent for now?
At the moment, it'd be around the 900 mark, probably just over.
Wow, there's a big difference there.
Yeah, yeah.
So let's just talk about the psychology of renters here because, someone could, as you said, four bedrooms, so they're paying a bit over 200 per room, right?
Well, we have added another room there and we've got plans in for a 6 month, so there's currently five rooms there.
Okay, so five into that, so say 180 they're paying roughly per room. Agreed?
Yeah, yep.
Is that what they're paying roughly? Okay, so if they're paying roughly 180 a room, why would somebody pay 180 a room when they could have the whole house for 350?
There's a few reasons. That 180 also includes the utility, so I've got to pay bills out of that. So at the 350, obviously that's double what they're paying for the room,
yep.
Plus they've got to pay bills on top of that. So the likelihood is they would need two or three of them to be able to do that.
Yeah.
And a lot of the time they'll have issues, being able to trust one another with the money, making sure that they collect the money to get the rent. And that's actually, looking at it the opposite way around, that's how some of them end up living in rooming houses because they get themselves in a situation where they go into a bad spot renting a house with some people and ended up on a rental blacklist.
Okay, so that's fairly common that you the people that you would take in on room by room are actually on a blacklist somewhere because
it definitely does happen a bit.
Okay, for non-payment of rent or for wrecking the place?
Often non-payment of rent.
What kind of checks do you do on your people going in?
Look, it varies. I mean, I'll talk to them and try and assess what they seem to be like, but obviously everyone presents well when you first speak to them.
Yeah.
I will ask where they had been previously living and why they left, and if possible, I'll check that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not always possible to, to follow up on the history and what they tell you, but you just try and verify what they're telling you as much as you can. In a lot of cases, you'll have a conversation with people and you'll give them a go anyway.
Mm.
Sometimes it works out, sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes if you get too many red flags at the beginning, you just say no.
Yeah. And do you have trouble getting tenants? Is it something that's, a difficult thing? Are you oversubscribed? Is it a difficult market to get tenants?
Not difficult. I mean, it probably takes a little bit to get established to begin with, but being the market that I'm dealing with, which is predominantly homeless, there's a lot of support organisations for them, and they've got to know me, and they just ring me all the time, constantly ringing, looking for accommodation.
Okay, so you've worked yourself into a position there as well with provision of things, and you try and make them as nice as you can as well. They're not slums.
No, I try and keep it as good as I can, and make sure the houses are visited regularly and maintained. And
you also do the management yourself, obviously, but you've got enough now. You've got enough properties that you can actually employ somebody to do that.
Yeah, I've got a couple of people employed at the moment, and I've got another guy starting, I think, in about 2 weeks.
Okay. So, you've obviously had to grow into that process. Where did you start? Like, where was the, obviously there's the court learning that, that we do and things like that, but a lot of it would have to be on the job as well, just learning how to deal with people. Have you had experience in that in the past?
I suppose I have. I was in retail businesses for more than 16 years, something like that. So, one in particular for 16 years, but other types of retail businesses are dealing with people a lot in that situation. It still is a little bit different in dealing with in accommodation, with the ongoing relationship. Mm. I've done security work before, so some of that's relevant too.
Yeah, okay. So for somebody who wanted to go down this track, what kind of advice would you give them?
I suppose it's like anything in any business. It is a business, and you've got to treat it as such. So whilst you do have to have some sort of relationship with the people, you can't let it get personal. It has to be pure business decisions. Mm. You set your rules and that's it. There's no varying from it.
Yeah, okay.
And definitely learn the rules too, because a lot of the residents know the rules, so you've got to know them well.
Yeah, so know what your rights are under your State's Tenancy Act and all that sort of stuff, so...
Now, obviously, across the states, it's very different as to how many people you can have in one property. And, for anyone listening, guys, you've got to go and check with your local area and your local state to see what is permissible for unrelated parties, living together, because that's really what it comes down to. And, in some states, an unrelated party might be... myself and my husband, we've got three kids, we would actually be unrelated parties, even though, we're married and whatever else. So the definition of unrelated parties can get very weird in some states.
Yeah, and it's often quite unclear. You've really got to check what the common interpretations are. It can be quite unclear what the definition is. But as far as number of people in houses, a lot of that's actually controlled by the building code, which is an Australian building code.
Yeah.
But there'll be different planning requirements in different states.
And councils too have a bit of a say in all of that too, don't they?
Some of the councils do too, depending on what the planning rules are for that state.
Yeah. So, the next step up, I guess, from that level is going to a full boarding house where you've actually got to have on-site managers, don't you?
Again, that's something that does vary a little bit state by state and depending on the size of it.
Mm.
I'm trying to think. I think New South Wales specify a number. A lot of the other states don't. But you'd probably want an on-site manager. I reckon you'd want an on-site manager by 30 anyway, if you had 30 on one site.
Yeah.
and potentially even over 20.
Yeah.
Okay.
And even if you have a few houses within one area, you'd be, if you've got up to 30 rooms, you'd best off having somebody that's...
You'd want a local manager that can call in, yeah, on short notice.
Okay. Yeah, you've got to have somebody reasonably close. How yeah. often would you have to go out to fix things and things like that?
It depends what it is. Depends on how the house is running. There's a couple that are not too far from me that I'm looking after at the moment. Don't have very many issues. I did have a little bit of damage just recently, so I had to go out about a week ago. But it's not a regular thing. Some of the other places, like where I've got a few houses, and I've got a handyman that goes around and does that. So there's just regular maintenance going on, yeah, and fixing little minor things where there's a few houses in one area. But look, generally, if you've got your management right, you can minimise that.
Okay. So, you know, it's not a big deal, but, you know, obviously it's not something that you take on lightly either.
Oh, no, look, that's what I say to everyone. It's like there will be damage. If you can't cope with that, don't do it.
Yeah, that's right. You actually offer to manage properties for people as well, don't you, if they're, you know, reasonably within your distance?
Yeah.
Now, this is something that I want to point out to people because, you know, on a normal management of a property, you'd pay somewhere between 5% and 8% in Australia to have your property managed normally. This renting room by room, obviously the numbers start to step up significantly. For instance, you know, executive leasing as an example, you'd be paying, you know, 17%, 18%, up to 20% possibly on a... executive leasing style property, but on a room by room, you know, if you want somebody to, you know, to take care of it completely and put the tenants in, put the tenants out, organise everything, do the lawn mowing, do everything, you know, the numbers start to creep up there. And what do you actually charge yep. to manage somebody else's property for them?
Yeah, we do that for 30% of the turnover. No letting fees or anything extra like that. So just a straight fee based on what's received.
Now, some of you might be just squirming in your seats at this stage because you go, 30%? Are you kidding me? Well, actually, Mark, you manage my one of my son's properties, and you know, on a normal rental, it would only rent for what would you say that property?
It'd probably be 350. Yeah, 350 is what I was thinking.
350. And it's obviously got quite a few rooms there, but when it's full, it'll be around about 1,500 thereabouts, won't it?
Yeah, yeah.
Which means that, you know, you take take 30% of that, you're down to, you know, say
1,050.
Yeah, 1,050. Now, that's a much better return than the 350 that he would be getting if it was rented out normally. So, you know, regardless of the fact that you know, it's you might go, wow, 30%, but look at the difference in the returns that can actually come in. So, you know, it's horses for courses, and it's not for everybody, but it's certainly something that, you know, well managed, they can produce significant returns.
Yeah, yes. Definitely.
Something I do want to warn against, though, is illegal properties being rented this way. Because there's a lot of properties that are being rented this way which are not legal. You know, in your situation there, you have to go through certain requirements like changing the bathrooms over so that they've got disabled access and,
yeah.
You know, the front entrances have to have, you know, wheelchair access and what else have we got? We've got hallways that have to be a certain width. And then you actually, you know, you actually have to have them certified as being able to be rented in that way. Is that right?
There's the compliance side of it. So the what you're talking about with the disability access, that comes in under the building code. So that's an Australia-wide thing.
Hmm.
And that applies to anything that's rented to more than three individual people. So there's some variations then on the registration in each state. In Victoria, because that's where I'm mainly operating, so that's just a matter of getting your building occupancy permit, making sure you've got all the stuff under the minimum standard. So there's some additional things that aren't in the building code, which are the types of building locks and food storage and things like that. Smoke detectors are already covered in the building code. Once all that's done, you just register with the council, and then that goes on a state register in Victoria. But then they'll come and inspect the property once a year to make sure that all the minimum standard stuff's there and working.
Mm-hmm.
There's other things you've got to do as well, like there's gas and electrical safety checks you've got to do at certain intervals and
yep.
So to maintain that.
So what about insurance? How much more is it to insure a property this way than normally, say?
You'll get a big different range of quotes, so it's something you certainly have to shop around for.
Mm.
You can probably get it for less than double. It'll be close to double the price of your regular insurance.
Okay. Yeah, so that's obviously an added cost. And out of the figures that we quoted before, there's electricity and gas and the other bills and bits and pieces to come out of it. But at the same time, that's, it's still much higher than you would normally get on a normal rental.
Yeah, hmm. Yeah.
Now, obviously for you guys, taking this road has made a massive difference for you because this is all you do now, isn't it?
It is.
And life's not too bad when you consider, you've just got to manage a few properties. I've seen a few pictures of you, Mark, sitting in a camping somewhere under a bit of a shade there with your computer set up, and this is saying, Mark at work or something to that effect.
Yep. Don't know if
it is much easier for us to travel and to set our own hours, and we're not really good at early morning people, so business doesn't really start up until late morning.
I noticed that. When we were talking about when to actually do the podcast, you said, not before 10 o'clock.
No.
Fair enough. Well, guys, thank you for coming on. Is there anything you'd like to say, or is there anything that advice you'd like to give to potential listeners out there as to whether they should come on board and be part of the I Love Real Estate community?
Well, there's no question. Come part of the I Love Real Estate community because the education in that is amazing, and you'll find it's more than property. The people that you get surrounded with are amazing. And then from there, you'll find your thing. And once you find your thing, you'll fly.
Yeah. It's just a matter of then repeating that thing, whatever it is.
And there's going to be a lot of learning, and we've still got a lot of learning, and we're enjoying all that side of it as well. And that keeps you alive, all the learning.
Absolutely. The day you stop learning, you die.
Yeah,
and the support from being around like-minded people as well, and people you can just talk to about anything. If there's something you've got a question about, there's someone that can answer it.
Yeah. Now, it's a great community. I'm very, very proud of the I Love Real Estate community. And for you guys, where's the path for you now? What's on your vision board and goal list for the next year or so?
Well, this year we've got a really busy year. I've got my son turned 21. I've got my eldest daughter's getting married, my youngest daughter's doing a debutante, then she turns 18, and I've got a nephew that just turned 18 and a niece that turns 21. So
you better get all them into property.
I've got a lot of organising and a lot of planning and a lot of dress shopping, which has been really good fun. So this year's really jam-packed with all that. And then our daughter's, the youngest one's also doing a VCE.
Right.
So quite an intense year or two, but enjoying all of that.
And as far as the property stuff goes.
Yeah, as far as the property stuff goes.
We've got quite a few projects that are at various stages at the moment that we've got to push through a bit more at the moment. So it's a matter of getting a lot of projects finished, get some new ones started and just expand what we're doing. Where you mentioned the management before, that's something that we're looking at expanding a little bit as well because it just makes it more efficient to run everything if we're doing high volume.
Mm.
Mark's goal for the year would be to get an office manager in.
Oh, definitely.
So a lot of times when he thinks of doing something and he thinks I should be, researching that or researching this, he can get the office manager either doing the menial duties or, within our business we have top quality bookkeeping and accounting. So
that's not internal, though.
No, that's external. But to bring it all in house and have an office manager that does all that for us would be his goal.
Well, you'd be saving on the bookkeeping if you brought somebody internally and then probably be able to cover all the rest of that stuff.
Yes.
That's true.
That's exactly why we're going to do it that way.
Yep.
Very good. So you can manage some more property. I better go and buy some more for you, hey?
Yeah, okay. Some more of mine. Yep.
Okay, guys. Well, thanks heaps for coming on and happy birthday, Amanda.
Thank you.
And that's it for us this time, guys. So I hope you enjoyed the little talk on room-by-room letting. And, you know, we'll be back again to talk to you very, very soon. So thanks, guys, and we'll catch you next time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye for now.
Bye.